We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 15th chapter, verses 20 to 23. Tadaiva te param jnanam.
Tadaiva param jnanam.
Dadami griham agataha.
Dadami griham agataha.
Gyatvanya vinivesham te.
Gyatvanya vinivesham te.
Putram eva dadam yaham.
Putram eva dadamaham.
Tadeva te param jnanam.
Tadeva te param jnanam.
Dadami griham agataha.
Dadami griham agataham.
Gyatvanya vinivesham te.
Gyatvanya vinivesham te.
Putram eva dadam yaham. Gyatvanya pinivesham te.
Putram eva dadam aham.
Putram eva dadam yaham.
Something about children.
Putram, son. I gave you a son. 20.
Tadeva te param jnanam.
Tadami griham
agataha.
Tadami griham agataha.
Yatvanya vinivesham te.
Yatvanya vinivesham te.
Tadeva
tadami aham. Tada.
Zen.
Eva.
Eva.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Day.
Unto you.
Param,
transcendental,
jnanam,
knowledge,
tadami,
I
would have delivered,
griham,
to your home, agataha, came, gyatva, knowing, anya abhinivesham,
absorption in something else,
in material things.
Te,
your
putram,
a son.
Eva,
only.
Tadami,
gave.
Aham,
I. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When I first came to your home, I could have given you the supreme transcendental knowledge, but when I saw that your mind was absorbed in material things, I gave you only a son, who caused you both jubilation and lamentation. Adhuna putriyam tapo pavataiva nupuyate evam darakiharayo vividhai shayasambara shabdadeyas chavishayas chalara javiputaya mahirajamalam kosho pitya matya surichanaha save pisho sere me shukamoha payartidaha gandharvanagara prakhya soknamaya manorataha. So this is verses 21 to 23, which we'll speak on. Translation. My dear king, now you are actually experiencing the misery of a person who has sons and daughters.
That's all?
No, it goes on. O king, I just paused because it is very realized knowledge amongst a lot of us here. O king, owner of the state of Shirasena, one's wife, his house, the opulence of his kingdom, and his various other opulences and objects of sense perception are all the same in that they are temporary. One's kingdom, military power, treasury, servants, ministers, friends, and relatives are all causes of fear, illusion, lamentation, and distress. They are like a Gandharva Nagara, a non-existent palace that one imagines to exist in the forest. Because they are impermanent, they are no better than illusions, dreams, and mental concoctions. This verse purport describes the entanglement of material existence. In material existence, living entity possesses many things, the material body, children, wife, and so on. Dehapatya kala tradishu. One may think these will give him protection, but that is impossible. In spite of all these possessions, the spirit soul has to give up its present situation and accept another. The next situation may be unfavorable, but even if it is favorable, one must give it up and again accept another body. In this way, one's tribulation and material existence continues. A sane man should be perfectly aware these things will never be able to give him happiness. One must be situated in his spiritual identity and eternally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a devotee. Angira Rishi and Narada Muni gave this instruction to Maharaj Chichiketu. Mukam karati vachalam bhangam langayate girim yakipantamam vande shi gurun jinatarinam Omagana tivirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshumiritam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. So here we have the forest of material existence described in one verse, that we have attachment, and all our attachments will cause us fear, illusion, lamentation, and distress, because they're no better than illusions, dreams, and mental concoctions. So that's why we are unhappy. And there's a verse in the 11th canto that is Bayam Dvitiya Piniveshita Syat, that fear arises when we see, when we place our happiness in something other than Krishna, something second, dvitiya, a second thing. Now, what is that second thing besides Krishna? First of all, it's the body. That's the second thing that we place our hopes and everything on. But then when we arrive at old age, we are very much disappointed with our body because it is deteriorating while we are actually living in it. And every day we wake up and see where has the pain shifted, which part will it be today, which part of our body. And if you just think, your body, how much happiness do you get from and how much distress do you get? Perhaps 99% distress and 1% happiness we get from the body. Of course, when you're young, you think it's all happiness. But the problem is that there are so many obstacles to that happiness. So what are some of the obstacles to happiness in this world, to enjoying? Who can give me one obstacle to happiness?
What you're asking us?
Yeah, I'm asking you. To tell me, obstacles to happiness in this world. This is not spiritual happiness, this is material happiness.
Oh, material happiness, yeah.
Obstacles to material happiness in this world.
Main difficulty for me is that the more you get, the more unhappy you are.
Okay, so you are getting some happiness.
And the more you get, the more happy you are.
Okay, so most people don't have this problem. The more you get, the more happy you are.
Unhappy.
Oh, I thought you said happy. Okay,
no,
yeah.
So
the more you get, the more unhappy you are.
Yeah,
yes. That's my son. First he thought he'll be happy by going to Los Angeles, but then it was a miserable place, and he had no place to stay. He was living in his car. Then he thought he'll be happy by going to Hawaii, and then he found out he was an island in the middle of nowhere, no social life there. So whatever he's trying, one thing after the other, then he thought he'll get a boat, but instead he got a motorbike. So now, having a motorbike, he's getting sick all the time because he's driving in cool air. So there's always some obstacle. What's another obstacle to material happiness in this world?
It's temporary.
So we become attached, but then we lose it, or else it changes. Everything in this world is always changing, is deteriorating. So when the thing changes, like our children, they change also from the actual theme here is how I gave you a son who caused you jubilation and lamentation. So it's temporary. He lost the son, and therefore he lamented. He was so much lamentation and distress. The same son that one second was causing him so much happiness, the next second was causing him equal amount or more amount of distress.
But it doesn't mean that all the sections of Karmakanda, it's just lie, because they're encouraging it to...
Okay, the question is Karmakanda a lie because it's encouraging you to enjoy? Yes,
Narada
Muni chastised yesterday. Why have you encouraged him? In the name of religion, they will try for material enjoyment. So why? He chastised yesterday. Why have you encouraged these people? But actually, the purpose is that they give you a sweet, a medicine covered with sweet.
Oh.
So the Vedas are like a medicine. If you follow the Vedas and you do these sacrifices, then you accept authority, at least, and you do progress. You do make some progress in life. So the medicine is that you worship Vishnu to get it. In all the sacrifices, you have to worship Vishnu as well. And that's the medicine. But the sweet is, you get to go to heaven, you get to enjoy, you get to do all these things. So he has medicine covered with a sweet, because otherwise they won't take the medicine. So that's why he wrote the Vedas. But actually, the medicine is there, and the medicine will work, and eventually you will realize that, this is not the best thing in life. The best thing is, first they'll think, okay, detachment is best, better if I become detached. And then, but higher than detachment is attachment to Krishna on the spiritual platform. So there is a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam somewhere, I can't remember right now, that the man and the woman, they unite for happiness. But as soon as they make their plans for happiness, the distress starts. So as soon as they start making the plans, then the distress begins. And so this is the nature of happiness in this world. Jai Shishirad Madhava. It's temporary. It's mixed with distress. And I even experienced that. Even though I'm having a spiritual life, I experienced the mixed happiness and distress when I was in New Govern, Australia, beautiful farming community, fresh air, beautiful trees, and they put me in a beautiful cabin with two bedrooms and a kitchen and everything, and I look out on my porch and I look down and I see the mountains and the clouds. And
surreal.
Yeah, it's beautiful, but there was a mixture there. There was a huge gas smell all the time coming from my cabin. They couldn't fix the gas to heat the hot water. So it's either hot water or gas all the time, cold water or gas all the time. So I chose the gas all the time. So it's always a mixture. I thought, oh, fresh air. No, not. I have everything is there. I should have had fresh air, but it just didn't happen, I thought, well, I can become healthy here in the farm.
Also gives you headache.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't healthy. So I couldn't stay in my beautiful cabin much. I was out most of the time. And, yeah. And so this is the nature of happiness in this world. I'll read a little bit from Bhagavad Gita. There's three levels of happiness: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Happiness in the mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning and nectar in the end, and awakens one to self-realization. So what is the poison in the mode of goodness? What could be the poison?
In the mode of goodness, the poison?
Yeah, it says, happiness in the mode of goodness, in the beginning, maybe like poison.
But because there's austerity.
Yes, it's austerity. The four rules and regulations. There is austerity in the mode of goodness. You have to control your senses. You have to control your mind. You have to get up early in the morning. You have to have baths. Even in the winter, you have to cook in the hot kitchen, even in the summer in India, 45 degrees. So this is austerity in the mode of goodness. Of course, even non-devotees do that, but happiness. Poison in the beginning means these austerities, these rules and regulations that you do. Things that you would not normally do if you were not following the spiritual path.
It's self-imposed.
Yeah, well, it's voluntary. Voluntary. Is voluntary. And living in Vrindavan is like that. If you don't voluntarily do austerities, then you will get something from Krishna, some austerities that you don't want to follow. If you don't voluntarily control your eating, then you will get an austerity of not being able to eat anything and living in the bathroom day and night. So this is, if you have to, don't eat the fried foods, don't eat outside, and you should be okay, and don't overeat, and you'll be okay in Vrindavan. The happiness derived from contact of the senses with their objects, which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. So some little happiness is there in the material world. I got the nectar. But then at the end there's the poison, just like, again, my son, he bought so many beautiful things to enjoy, but then the poison is he didn't pay for it yet. Now he's $7,000 in debt. So that's the poison. The poison is that, even though that they give you this illusion, buy, buy, buy. Use your credit card. Just buy more. and pay later. But then what if you don't have the money to pay later? So that's the poison. That's one example. Of course, then Prabhupada has sex life. That's a nectar in the beginning. And he says, because then there's divorce, there's lamentation, and eventually there's death, and you have to be separated, even if you don't get a divorce. Even if you may say, like here it says, you may have a very favorable situation in this life. We tell you, there's so much distress. No, I'm very happy. I have my family and nice job and bank balance and everything. I don't mind. I will stay here because, you know, I'm getting some happiness. But also it's temporary. So you may say, okay, I'm willing to stay here. But then, okay, but it's temporary. You can't have it forever. And Prabhupada gives the example of somebody who rents a house for 3 days. But while he's there for 3 days, he starts painting and decorating and everything like he's going to be there permanently. And so that's how we are in this world. We have the body, we have our room, whatever. And that's why the sannyasis, they don't stay more than 3 days in one place, so they don't get attached. And as soon as you get to some place, then you start arranging things according to your convenience and how you will be, it will be nice for you. And so we go in our different situations and we try to arrange things so everything will be conducive for our happiness. And so, but then we have to leave. We can't stay there. And that's the problem with this world. Even if you do have a nice place, Prabhupada says, even if it's favorable, you have to give it up and again accept another body. So while you're in this situation, if you do impious activities, then that's your ticket to hell. You may be in a very nice situation, but then you're eating meat and taking intoxication. And so you're living in hell. That is actually happiness in the mode of ignorance. Blind self-realization, delusion from beginning to end, which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is in the nature of ignorance. So this is intoxication, where you have a dream within a dream. Now here it says it's like a dream, even this day life. It's a daydream and a night dream. So nighttime we know it's a dream. But daytime, we don't know it's a dream. And we're just living in this dream of our false identity. We are dreaming that I am black, I am white, I'm man, I'm woman, I'm this, I'm that. I have to do this, and I have to do that. So that is our daydream. And then we have our night dream. So if you take some intoxication, then you're still awake, but you're in another dream, within the dream. You're having your daydream, and it's not your night dream, but you're in another dream within your dream. It's a more, much more intense. And
sounds really attractive.
Yeah, and my son, he went to Hollywood, and there's a sign at Hollywood, "Welcome to the Land of Illusion." Yeah. And there's a sign somewhere there. Yeah.
Not in the temple, but
in the world. Yeah.
Wow.
Welcome to the Land of Illusion, because and my son, he used to be addicted to watching movies, and he said it's an instant dream. And so he says, "Movie is an instant dream. Then you can just get out of the world and be in a dream." That's another dream within a dream. The computer is also the virtual reality. Mm-hmm. You see all these advertisements, you know, become a Viking and kill all these demons, become this. It's like, you have already your false identity, and then you're going to adopt you're really dreaming, even on the computer. You can be this, you can be that, you can. And then you engage other people in your dream. I say, join this clan. And fight these demons. I mean, I see it on my Facebook, I think it is. Some of my relatives, they're into that. My sister, actually. So I see that, join, join that. And they're fighting on the internet, you know, in their dream world, and they get people to help them fight. It's like really another dream within a dream. There's so many dreams. And, of course, there's the movies. That's another dream within a dream. And so the dream is that we can become the king, although we have no qualification and no money. And we can, like in America, they used to have Queen for a Day. There's a television TV program, Queen for a Day, and then they let you go shopping and buy everything you could desire, like a car and a fridge and, you know, whatever. It's Queen for a Day. They had it when I was a kid.
In the 60s.
Yeah. When I was a kid, that's when I used to watch TV. I was just a child.
That's an old program.
Yeah, I know. I was. You know how old I am now. Yeah, yeah. I was when I, my childhood, I didn't watch TV after I left home, actually. I was 18. And in, as a devotee, I didn't watch the TV. So, yeah, that's I was remembering that. So everybody wants to be queen for a day or king for a day and enjoy. But actually, what happens is you get the opposite. You get the opposite. But it's not false. It's actually reality. I mean, the elements of this world are real. And we can use them. We can use them in Krishna's service. In the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, it's described, there is one verse that it's just like the light, the reflection of the light in darkness. So this world is dark. And the soul is the reflection of the light. And also happiness is a reflection. We can't get real happiness. Just like beginning of Bhagavatam, it says it is like a desert, illusion in the desert. We see in the desert, we see water ahead, or in a very hot day in India, we see all this steam coming up, or looks like there's water ahead on the road. And we keep going, oh, water, water, yes. And so in this material world, the happiness is like that. We see the happiness just ahead, and we think, we just keep going for it. And eventually we're going to get it, we think. We'll get some happiness, but it only ends in lamentation and distress. So Gandharva Nagara. Yeah. Did anybody see this Gandharva Nagara? It's a palace in the forest. We don't live in the forest much.
It's like a mirage.
Yeah, it's like a mirage, yeah. You see a whole palace and a city in the forest. Gandharva Nagara means city of Gandharvas. In the forest. And in Ireland, some things happen, so I was just wondering, you know, maybe it can be.
No, it's a fairyland kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. But here it says you can see, sometimes you see it. One imagines a non-existent palace, the one imagines to exist in the forest. So, yeah, I hear about, you know, leprechauns and things like that. I mean,
there are leprechauns.
Yeah, there are leprechauns. So they exist.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
She's in a green sari, so.
Even now,
Oh,
Parshram.
He's not himself after that.
Oh, so now they're integrated into our modern society.
There's different sort.
Are they also on internet too?
They went on Harinam as well.
Where?
The whole Harinam is leprechauns. And
where is this?
Well, that was St. Patrick's Day.
They dressed up. Dressed up as leprechauns.
It was St. Patrick's Day, you know, that's normal.
Oh, it's amazing. You have to send me some photos of
it. Yeah.
Devotees are a little...
So it could be their palace in the forest, if you go. I mean, they could have one. You know, they could have... That could be what you're seeing. If you go in the forest. Leprechaun palace.
What I understand is that the trip refers to a tropical forest. When you go through the forest, you breathe those fumes, and those fumes actually make you hallucinate.
Okay.
And you see that. Actually see that.
We see it. Okay.
But it's a hallucination.
It's a hallucination. Okay, thank you for clearing that up. I was always wondering about that. Gandharva Nagara in the forest. Now I know it's a hallucination. That's similar to a dream, illusion, and mental concoction. So, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about concoctions, right in the beginning, second chapter, we should give up prajahati yada kaman. Sarvan partama nogatan, atmani vatmana tushta stita pragyasta ruchite. When a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction. So the concoction is the desire for sense gratification. That's what the concoction. All our concoctions are to fulfill the desire for sense gratification. So we imagine, or we try to plan, okay, if I do this, then certainly I will be happy. If I do that, I will be happy. And when his mind thus purified, finds satisfaction in self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So the concoction is that we are the center of existence, and we can be happy in that being the center. That is the concoction.
Yeah.
And the reality is Krishna is the center of existence, and we can be happy serving him. Because it's our nature to be happy, anandamaya upyasat. One time some theosophists in South America, Caracas, they asked Prabhupada a question, what is the purpose for anything? What is the purpose? Prabhupada said, ananda. That's the purpose. That's why anybody does anything in this world. Just for ananda. Because by nature we are ananda. We are part of Krishna. We're meant, we're such an ananda, vigraha. also. We are meant to have happiness in relationship with Krishna. But here we're going for so many other forms. And in these other forms, in these other names, we are seeking happiness. So it's a world of names. And we're caught up in different names. We're caught up in this. Srila Prabhupada, he wrote his Vrindavan Bhajan. He said, "Now I'm sitting here. Where have my mother and father gone? Where are they now? Tell me. Who can tell me where they are? I'm sitting here and I have nothing. I've lost all my money and they have abandoned me. But I'm sitting and I'm laughing. I'm laughing." He says, this gives me a good laugh, seeing how everything is temporary. And he says, all that's left is a list of names. And as we said before, you look 100, 200 years from now, who will remember you? And what will you be? You'll just be some name. They said, they're going to, so I will have my name on one list. They're going to put Prabhupada disciples up in Mayapur, all the list.
I will be
on the list of those names.
We'll make it come for you.
That's okay. I don't need it. I think we'll have to come back as the third generation to finish the work we did. Yes, I think so. We won't finish it in this life. So, yeah, a list of names. Gandhavanagra, this is our life in this material world. So here, give up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, arise from mental concoction. When the mind thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone. So here's the reality. The reality is that there is happiness, but it's not here. It's not in the body, it's not in the fallible soldiers. Here it says deha patya kaladra, children, wife, and so on. The happiness is not there, and you cannot depend on them. That is for sure. Who will help you? Who will be there and when you really need it? Who will be there at the time of death when you want to think of Krishna? Will it be your family or will it be somebody else? Who knows? Generally, if you have a daughter, she goes off and marries somebody else. And if you have a son, he goes off and enjoys somewhere. Right, because I asked one Indian, I asked one of my godbrothers, he had two sons. I said, so, and he's old, like he's my age, 60. I said, you know, in India, usually, you know, the joint family, this and that. I said, so, he's a devotee. I said, so, are your sons helping you in your old age? He said, no, they're asking me for money in my old age. I talked to another one who has eight children. So your sons are helping? No, they're asking me for money. They just come and when I see me, they want money. So what can we do? This is the material world. And then when you're old and useless, then you get stuck in one of these homes. But that's very expensive, so I think our kids won't afford it. But they'll be stuck with us, or we'll be stuck somewhere. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I'll be stuck in the Belfast Temple.
Haribol!
I think Anishrath is more likely. But maybe for the winter, I'll have to move. But for the winter, I might have to move here because it's too austere.
It's very austere. It's very austere.
I think for 11 months winter there.
It's
winter all year.
I'll have to go.
It's very
I'll have to go down to Italy or somewhere close for the winter.
Now you're talking.
Croatia or something.
Well, in Italy, it's actually very austere in the winter in temples.
Oh, okay.
They just don't have heating.
All right. Yeah, it's like Vrindavan. It's like Vrindavan.
Come on.
Oh, they had last time I was there.
But the best is an apartment somewhere in Dublin.
Fantastic heating system in Israel.
No, don't worry.
You can stay in my apartment.
Yeah, that's true. For the winter, if I get cold, I'll go visit Bhagwan.
Major question is because, it appears that Prabhupada says those things only about material marriage and material married life. But if you do it in Krishna consciousness, that's true. That's happiness. That's reality. Is it true?
Oh, your experience. How about is your experience?
My lips are sealed.
Your wife might hear the thing.
No, but the truth yeah. is,
the truth is
if
as much.
If you are completely in Krishna consciousness, if yeah. you are absorbed in Krishna yes. consciousness, it's actually.
Then there's happiness. Yes, and that's happiness. This is the point that it, the last sentence here, the whole purport is kind of depressing, but if you get to the end, you have one sentence. There's many purports like that. You'll get a whole depressing purport. At the end, Prabhupada will say, one must be situated in his spiritual identity and eternally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a devotee. And there was one such a depressing I did it. Where was that? New Govardhan. It was about how the Kshatriyas are miserable, the Grihasthas are miserable. How can they have happiness? And there, you know, there's so much mixture. And then, and everybody's miserable. That was the whole purport. And then the last sentence. But if you engage in devotional service, you'll be happy. The Prophet does that sometimes. He says, oh, what are we going to do now? He says, well, there is hope. And as you say, we were happy when I was dressing Radharani, and I mean, I was dressing Krishna, my husband was dressing Radharani in Calcutta, and that was our best time in marriage life. I was living as Brahmachari, he was living as Brahmachari. And of course, that wasn't Grihastha life. But yes, also in Grihastha life, you can have happiness if you are both, if the goal is Krishna, if the goal is Krishna consciousness, and that's what you're working for, and that's how you are living and bringing up your children and having your relationship on that basis, then you can actually be happy. It's a duty to Krishna, service. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I should wait till the end.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So if you do it like that, then it's possible. But as soon as it gets mixed with sense gratification, then the unhappiness will come. Even if you're a devotee. Even if you're devotees, as soon as there is some mixture there that, well, this comes first. My sense gratification must come first in this case, above Krishna. And then you will be unhappy. But you also, it's a very delicate balance, because there are cases just like my god sister Arundhati. She wrote a letter to Prabhupada. She thought he'd be so pleased. Oh, I've left my 1.5-year-old son with somebody else to watch, and I'm doing deity worship day and night.
Yeah,
Prabhupada said,
Pradyumna's
wife. Yeah, it's Pradyumna, his wife, and the son was Aniruddha. And Prabhupada said, no, your first duty is to take care of the children. These are Vaikuntha children. And so that's your first duty. And so, yeah, so it's a fine line there, but the duty means you don't give up your Krishna consciousness. I know ladies who... They say, oh, I can't chant 16 rounds now because I have a baby. And when I had my baby, I was 5 hours in the book table. I was chanting 16 rounds, and my son was feeding every hour for a half hour because he was a big one. I gave him grains at the age of 4 months. It was really too much. I was 40 years old. So, but I was chanting all the time, chanting and feeding. So you can't do it. You just have to keep chanting whatever you're doing. You chant your rounds and...
Distraction. I think that's the whole point. If you love something which is completely an illusion, it's very difficult to chant. It's hard to get through.
Well, you have to see the connection to Krishna. If you see the connection, and then you'll be okay. And then there won't be lamentation, because, well, it's not my child, it's Krishna's child. And that was Chichaketu's. What they're trying to teach him, it's not your son. And the son will come later on, and he'll say, how come... How can you say, you are my mother and father? I had so many mothers and fathers. So why do you say, you are my mother and father? How can I accept this set as my mother and father? I've had so many. And why are you telling me that this is my mother and father? So, but if we separate it from Krishna, if we see separately, then we suffer. We suffer so much lamentation, so much distress, so much. We see it separately from Krishna. Of course, it's painful if the child goes away from Krishna consciousness. So that's a heavy pain. And that was I experienced with my son when he kind of rejected Krishna consciousness. So it's very painful for the mother. But then we have to understand everybody has their free will, and they have to find Krishna themselves. Just like we found Krishna ourselves, so the children also have to do that. And then we also have to have faith in Krishna that he will protect, he will guide him towards his lotus feet. And he won't forget what he learned when he was small. And so, yeah, so that my experience, that was the greatest pain for me, when the child kind of leaves like that. If he leaves home, that's not so bad, you know. But if he leaves Krishna conscious, then you really feel disturbed. And that's how I was explaining in one of the classes I gave, that just like Chichaketu was experiencing 8 different levels of grief. So when your child does that, you also go through that level of shock, denial, anger, fear, guilt, and then what can happen? Yeah. Oh, denial. Oh, my son, no, he's a great devotee. You just don't understand. There's some people in Vrindavan, they have this son who's autistic, completely off. And they keep saying, no, just another year or two and he'll be a great devotee of Mahabhagavat. He's going to be all right. And they're very positive, which is good. But it's highly unlikely. It's denial, I think. It's actually denial. There's denial. There's all these things that happen when you have this attachment and grief. So, yeah, and then finally the 6th level is lamentation. And then the 7th level, finally you accept, okay, my son's in Maya. He's struggling in the ocean of material existence, sometimes going down, sometimes up, but mostly down. And then finally you return to pursuits of love. That's the 8th level, that you turn your love to Krishna and to all other devotees and other children. And you realize, well, there's so many. We have a huge family here, actually. I have so many sons and so many daughters and so many brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. And it's helpful to be a devotee. It's very, very nice. It's the only way to live. Okay, so we'll stop here. On a positive note, a solution is to engage in devotional service, connect everything to Krishna, and then you'll be happy. So any questions or comments?
Mm-hmm. Just before I went to Vrindavan in 2007, I was really struggling, you know, with what to do, and you know, with my daughter at that time. And,
right.
And then I got, it was like a voice, and I was like, super song, you know, it just one night, and it's like Krishna just said, "She's not your daughter," and it really stayed with me. And another time I was like asleep, but there was a dream.
She's not your daughter. All mothers and fathers should learn this one simple fact, and it will save them a lot of trouble.
And there was in a dream state, this verse from the Bhagavad Gita kept going round and round and round in my head. And I have
which verse?
It's the second chapter. I can't remember the number. It's one who is equipoised in happiness.
Yeah, that's after this next one.
Is certainly eligible for liberation.
Yeah, that's the one after this. First 56.
And then the purport about, you know, Prabhupada is that when Motitani took sannyas and mentally. And that, so all at that time, before I was trying to get away, you know, this verse was coming, and I didn't know whether it was that verse or so. I came to class the next morning at an ishras, and I asked some devotees, you know, what's this verse? The last line, it was in my mind.
Oh, that's a different one. Yeah, so we taught by. Oh, that's in the beginning.
Second chapter.
Yeah, yeah, that's verse 15.
215.
So we taught by Kalpate.
Certainly eligible for liberation.
Yam hi navyati ante te purisham purisharshva samadukha sukham dhiram. So we taught by Kalpate. He drinks nectar, Amrita.
So I couldn't understand why this verse. Lines, because I didn't know that.
Lord Chaitanya took sannyas.
Yeah.
Ooh, here, this is really cool.
And then when we did the Bhakti Shastri and we covered that purport, I thought, oh, that was Krishna, you know, he's telling me, don't, you know.
One who is serious about making his life perfect surely adopts a sannyas order of life in spite of all difficulties. Difficulties usually arise from having to sever family relationships, to give up the connection of wife and children. But if anyone is able to tolerate such difficulty, surely his path to spiritual realization is complete. So Arjuna is advised to persevere, even if it's difficult to fight with family members. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. So that is, yeah. So in your case, that was the answer. Now in your case, it's to stay with your family and make them all devotees and Krishna conscious. It's different. Different times. Yeah. But there is a time where you have to actually prepare for death. It's not when your kids are small. I mean, that's how it used to be when Prabhupada was here. People were taking sannyas. My god sister, she got married at 16. Her husband took sannyas when she was 70. So it was like...
Yeah.
And then she had married again when she was... She was a widow for many years. Maybe 10, 15
years. She wrote the Prabhupada asking if she can get married.
Yeah, I don't know. At that time, I don't think he said... I don't remember.
He wouldn't allow him.
No,
he went to allow.
Yeah. But later on, she did. Yes, Nitai.
Like, yeah, in the early days, seems like Srila Prabhupada, he really did call for like great austerity.
Besides
really being renounced. So I just wonder how we see that. Do we see, well, okay, there's the pioneering days, Srila Prabhupada had to get a movement started.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And he called for great things with his disciples. And now perhaps we have to be a bit more reflective and
we can't just do that now. No, you can't do that, no.
I think we must be a bit more cautious as regards to
Right. Oh, now they have all these rules. Your youngest son has to be 16 years old. And you have
enough
to be certain
is that
age.
Is that enough to say, because I'm in charge of the child, you mean, well, who would say, well, you know, we don't want to concoct either. We don't want to say that, well, oh, well, it was just time and circumstance. They were the pioneer days, and
time and circumstance is also according to your life. Like in her life, in her case, it was time for renunciation. There was a time the child was completely wild and not, very rebellious and not accepting anything, and she was going down. You have to be careful not to go down with the kid, not to sink in with the sinking ship. So you have to know when is the time to renounce and when is the time to accept it. That's important. Now, of course, the grihastha life is becoming more. I mean, we weren't grihasthas. We were living in the temple. All the grihasthas were living. They had to give all their money to the temple. They were living like the brahmacharis, no difference.
Probably the biggest question is, what did Prabhupada create? Was it like a special monastic life for married people?
No, that was an emergency situation. But the ideal was that they live outside, and they have their own families and their own work and everything. But he said they should be brahmachari grihasthas. I mean, that's the ideal. The ideal is to be a brahmachari grihastha, and that just means controlled sex life, controlled like that, everything controlled. And then you're non-different. And preaching and the goal, the main thing in your life is Krishna consciousness. Not that, okay, there's a little bit of Krishna here and a lot, 90% of sense gratification there. But Krishna's there and, we have our deities and we polish them off and we whatever every day. But, we do have to, even now you can have the same type of grihastha life that not the austere, like living separately in the temple. That's not recommended. But to make your home, the main thing is to make your home a temple. That's Prabhupada encouraged that too. He said to make your home. And we have examples in Prabhupada's time where grihasthas did live outside and had. Yeah.
Three or four.
There's a few examples. Yeah. And they had Tulsi, they had deities, they had everything outside. They weren't near a temple. Now it's more, we've grown up a little bit, and the vision is more expanded. The emergency is there, but it's not as demanding as it was when Prabhupada was here. We had nothing. Then we had no temples, we had no money, we had no devotees. But now, yes, we can. But the revolution goes on, and the spirit goes on. So if you really want to be in that mood of Srila Prabhupada, you can. And you can live your life like that, still sacrifice, still do austerity. And the main thing is for grihasthas is to be an example of an ashram. How you can have grihastha as an ashram. That's the challenge of existence, the challenge for grihasthas. How to make it an ashram. There's instructions in Bhagavatam, how you treat even the animals in your house are treated nicely and uninvited guests are like treated like God and these things. You can read, study Bhagavad Gita and see. But the main thing is that Krishna is, everything is, you try to connect everything to Krishna and everyone. But it's not so easy because everyone has their free will. And they don't, maybe they'll refuse to be connected to Krishna at some point. Now,
no, that's okay, that's clear now.
When you're young, then it's easier. When they get older, then it becomes more difficult because their nature comes out. Their nature comes out, the children.
But I just don't understand where this vision of Grihastha, living outside, coming to the temple on Sundays or once a month, came from. Was it ever Prabhupada's vision?
No, his vision, they would live... I mean, no, he had three categories. He had three categories. One lived in the temple and did full-time service. One lived near the temple. And they also would do a lot of service. And one lived far from a temple. And the one who lived far from the temple, that's the one who comes on Sunday. But they should have a temple in their house. I remember he was here. There were three gradations of grihasthas who were accepted as devotees. So if you're not near a temple, if it's very far for you to go, then you have to make your house a temple, and then you should do nam hat, you know, invite people like that. And if you're near a temple, then the temple is your temple, basically. Although you can offer, you could have deities offer your food at your home. But then service should be done more if you're near the temple, if possible, then more service can be done. Yeah.
You're talking about the miseries of grihastha life, or whether they exist for devotees, but I noticed that when my consciousness wasn't good, I got the wake-up call from the family members with difficulties, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody would be yelling at me, well, there'd be some real difficulty. But it was because my consciousness wasn't right. And if my consciousness was right, everything would go smoothly at home.
Yeah, I know.
And I really noticed the difference.
Yeah, that's a very good point. When your consciousness is right, then everyone appreciates it. And when it's wrong, like even my son, you know, sometimes I get, you know, I try to control him a little bit or something. He says, Mom, you're supposed to be detached. You're supposed to be Krishna conscious, right? You know, he's the one in Maya.
No.
Yeah, they know the philosophy backwards and forwards. He says, now you're losing it, you know. He'll tell me. You know, he's told me many times. He says, you're too attached. This is not good.
He learned the philosophy, but... I mean, they can push all the buttons as well.
Yes. Yeah. No, but it's true. If you are off, then they're the first ones to notice.
I didn't think that they would specifically say it.
Well, he did, but maybe you...
There would just be some difficulty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't appear to be... Like,
it doesn't go smoothly.
Yeah, you know, I would have some... You know, my mind would be uncontrolled or something, and I go home and my husband would be yelling about something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something else. But the chastisement would come. And I think, oh, why is this happening? And then I realize, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. It's like we project everything, and then it comes back. It's like a reflection that comes back to us. The state of our mind is projected, you know, on the people, and then they give it back to us. It's like that.
We don't see the world as it is.
We don't see the world. We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. That's an old Yiddish. Yeah. That's a Jewish way of saying Atmanvan. Manyatejika, same thing.
Well, it's hard to just... Maybe I'm wrong. You see, it looks like Narada is giving this instruction only at the time when the guy is completely... He cannot get up, he's laying down there.
Yeah, he's finished. He said, I could have told you this before,
but
you were so much in Maya, I couldn't do it. So I gave you the sun just to see about how it is.
Experience.
Well, there's different ways of learning, you know, by hearing. That's the intelligent people learn by hearing, and less intelligent people learn by experiencing. So Narada understood he needs experiential learning here. They call that now experiential learning, where you have to go through it to see. So he says, you know, if I tell you, oh, you know, it'll be misery for you if you have a child, you won't believe me. You'll say, no, I want one anyway. Just give me a child. Just give me a son. So experiential learning. He gave him a son. Then he got the experience. Oh. And then when that point came where he was intensely lamenting, and then he said, okay, now I can talk to you. I can talk to you. Yeah.
I was thinking, like, with King Cato, he was obviously, I mean, he was very advanced too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was advanced. That's why he got it. That's why he got the lesson.
So he just had a very short lesson. His child just died very quickly.
Yeah.
Which is like how we see that, like, normally grihasthas go through the whole lifetime before they learn, but he learned a good lesson.
That's right. And it's also for Bhagavatam too, you know. I mean, he's the example, right? It was a quick lesson. That's a good perception. It was very quick. He learned it quickly.
Krishna just gives us what we need.
Yeah, he gives us just what we need. Yeah, so that was what he needed. And you see, it's really, Krishna gives you. And then, but the challenge for us is to respond in the correct way, that as devotees. Things happen, and according to how we respond, we come back here and take another body, or we suffer, or we become happy and transcendent. So our response is the most important thing. When things happen to us, how do we take things? How do we see things? How do we perceive the difficulties that are happening to us?
Krishna's mercy.
Mercy, yes, that's the best. Best is Krishna's mercy. But sometimes it's not easy. You know, like when my husband left me, I thought, how come it's happening to me? You know, then after a while, well, why not? It's happening to so many people in this world. Why not you? So who do you think you are that this won't happen? And after 3 months, I said, hey, this is a lot better, actually. I started thinking, this is a really good arrangement.
You were reading Bhagavatam, weren't you?
Yeah, it was amazing. After 3 months, I got the call to go to Mayapur. Didn't work out, then I got the call to go to Vrindavan. It was just amazing. And also I had the realization at the same time, this is pretty good actually. But then I had to leave that situation. I thought, well, you know, because he was still supporting me. I was living in a nice place on the beach in Goa, and I thought, wow, this is pretty good. But then I got the call to Vrindavan. I said, well, I better go. Krishna's calling me. If I don't go, he'll force me to go, better if I go voluntarily. Mm-hmm. So I went to Vrindavan, and I made a deal. I said, Krishna, I'll go, but you have to take care of me. So went to Vrindavan. I was in this beautiful house, some life member's house, for 2 years, and now I'm in another house, devotee's house. No money, but in a beautiful house.
But did you have like a sense of insecurity?
Yeah, I did for some time. I did have some sense of insecurity. In the temple, I never had that feeling. I always felt like there's no problem. But outside, with children, then it was a little bit more difficult for me to feel like, have that faith, you know, that, okay, everything's going to be provided, you know. But then now it's easier if you don't have a family and children to just, you know, it's just you, then, yeah, depend on Krishna. No, what's the problem? But if you have children, it's more difficult. But the great devotees, I mean, Srivas Thakur, he was completely, he said, you know, he had this huge family, and he had no insecurity.
Yeah, well, he had lotus feet of
Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. Well, you can also have lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. He's ready to give you his lotus feet. But are you ready to take his lotus feet? This is a thing. Yeah.
That feeling of having to depend on Krishna, it's actually very good to go through my experience. I had this same experience of feeling insecure on my own, but then when you've been through the insecurity, you feel the horrible insecurity, but then when you go through it and you depend on Krishna, then it's actually much easier.
Yeah, it's easier when you...
When you've done it.
When it comes to the bottom line, okay, all my money is finished, now what do I do? Now I have to depend on Krishna. Nobody else is going to give me money. Yeah. When it comes to that, it came to that point in my life, I said, okay, now what? So then, and then, you know, immediately I got so much money, I said, oh, somebody, you know, just out of the blue. Actually, I started preaching. It wasn't out of the blue. I understood the message Krishna was giving me. Now, I'm kicking you out of Vrindavan to preach. If you stay here, you'll spend money. If you go out, you don't have to spend any money anymore. But actually, it's a lot more to it than that. It's time. The age is right. And the I studied the whole Bhagavatam, and finished the 10th canto, and now it's time to, we can go out and share it. We can share it with others, and the sun is gone, and you're free, and can just go, and travel and preach. No family encumbrances. So, the world is waiting. The world is there.
What I'm trying to say is, according to time.
Yeah, according to time, exactly. Now the time. Now it's the time.
Because when Tamal Krishna and some other sannyasis were going to brahmacharis in the temple and some, telling them the same philosophy.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but.
And they got kicked out, you know, to China or something like that.
Because it was the wrong. I mean, you're supposed to go brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, not brahmachari, sannyas. I mean, it's not usual. It's not the way to do it. And most of those that he was preaching to all became grihasthas later on. So it's good to. Yeah. The preaching was not the proper time and case. You have to see the people and all that. And yes, and that's why there was problems in the society. There were the fighting between grihastha and sannyasi and all that, temple presidents and sannyasi, because everybody would leave the temples and join their party, and the temples would be empty. They'd have no devotees. And so then, but Prabhupada, then he said, because they were criticizing each other, and then Prabhupada said, who can follow in this age of Kali? Nobody can follow. So if we just fight about it, then it just will bring us down. As they were criticizing, the grihasthas are not following, the sannyasis are not. So they were just, it just becomes a fight.
So, I think about 76, and probably
76,
that the old grihasthas, they pulled out all those files and all the sannyasis and all the
Anyway, it was just useless fighting for nothing. Yeah. And Tamal went to China, and.
Vishnujanta disappeared.
He disappeared, yeah. He disappeared.
He didn't show up in Calcutta. You were in Calcutta.
He was in Calcutta before that, but then he went to Mayapur.
All right. But he never went back.
From Mayapur, he didn't come back, as far as I remember. I did see him in Calcutta before. He was learning. I was actually teaching him to play the sarod because I used to be a cello player. Yeah. But then he just left, and we got news that he drowned himself in the Triveni.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yeah, some people who work there. They have people who drown you, as for a living. You pay them and they help you drown. And so some of those people said, we got one of yours. recently, one of yours came here to drown, and so we helped him. anyway. If it was the West, they'd put them in jail.
But there it's just normal business, Brahmin business.
Yeah, it's whatever. I don't know if it's Brahmana business, but it's somebody's business. But anyway, we just try to connect to Krishna and everything as much as possible, and then there will be no difficulties, especially our mind. That's the first thing that has to connect. If the mind is okay, then, as she said, then everything will be okay. If we connect our mind to Krishna, then we will see things in connection to Krishna. And there won't be a problem. Okay, Hare Krishna.